Please be seated. As far as biblical passages go, the one that we've heard from Ecclesiastes today is probably one of the ones that has sunk most into our pop culture minds, thanks largely to the birdsong from the 1960s. And maybe like you, you have memories of singing this song, kind of bopping around in your car, on your teenage bed, wherever it was, singing the words, "There's a time to be born, a time to die, a time to kill, a time to heal." And this poetic back and forth make for great lyrics. And the repetition almost lulls you into a sense of comfort that everything has a meaning and everything has a purpose. Or does it? In suggesting that there's a point to it all, the Ecclesiastes author is really positing a solution to theodicy. Bad things happen because they were supposed to happen. It was the correct time for them. They were meant to be. But what if you knew the person who died? What if you're related to the one who's killed? Is there ever really a time to be killed? And even if there is it possible to quantify grief to show that the value of grief is less than the value of fate? Now, it's not just as easy as discounting Ecclesiastes. Like most theodicies, the ideas in this text are there because they provide real comfort to people. Knowing that there might be a purpose to evil can give evil meaning, and that meaning can be invaluable as people heal. So this theodicy can be extremely powerful for some. But for others, the words might not sit so well. So how do we proceed? In the trauma and theology class that I'm teaching this term, this is one of the questions we grapple with every week. And some of the voices we've read grapple with it too. So earlier this term, our class read a book by a philosophy professor named Susan Bryson, who survived a violent attack. She wrote about an aunt who sent her a birthday card. And that card said, quote, "She was sorry to hear about my horrible experience, but pleased to think that as a result, I will become stronger and be able to help so many people. A real blessing from above, for sure." End quote. For Bryson, her aunt's Ecclesiastian attempts at comfort were less than comforting to her. Bryson goes on to write that, quote, "Such attempts at a theodicy discount the horror I had to endure. But I learned that everyone needs to try and make sense, in whatever way, of such senseless violence," end quote. I think Bryson's right here. For some, there is deep comfort in feeling that evil was meant to be, and for others, it's not enough. Some, like Bryson, feel no suffering is worth the cost. And for them, the question of how can a good God allow this resonates strongly. Back to the birdsong for a moment. The birdsong only gives us part of the reading for today, the lulling back and forth of a time for this and a time for that. It's the part that we know the most well. But when John read the reading, he read several sentences that came after this series of repetition. And that move on the part of the people who put together the lectionary is significant. And that move on the part of the writer of Ecclesiastes to include those sentences is also significant. Because those sentences at the end have a very different context for seeing evil. So what can we learn if we move past the catchy lyrics to the part at the end? The end of today's lesson, the writer says that humans cannot find out what God has done from beginning to end. This is a different theodicy entirely. We can almost hear overtones of Job in the background from the whirlwind, God responding to Job's persistent calls for an explanation by simply saying, "Can you draw Leviathan out with a fishhook? Can you understand my ways? I don't think so." Like the author of Job, the Ecclesiastes writer recognizes that we're different than God. We don't have God's perspective. We don't have God's power. And sometimes, from our vantage point, we don't get the full picture. Sometimes we don't get full understanding. So maybe, like Job or Ecclesiastes, we should just be content in the knowledge that there's some divine wisdom to suffering that's beyond our comprehension. Maybe when we reach the end, when we reach the realm beyond, then maybe we'll understand. And again, this is a theodicy that provides tremendous comfort to many people and also troubles some. So the second theodicy alone doesn't suffice any better than the first. The truth is, to some extent, I set myself up for failure today by preaching on this text. Choosing to talk about the problem of evil is something Christian theologians have struggled with for millennia, and everything that every one of them has suggested has a flaw in it. And before these theologians struggled, the biblical writers struggled. But one of the marvels that we have today from those biblical writers is a corpus, a biblical corpus, a complete Bible that doesn't present one theodicy alone. It doesn't privilege one cause of evil above others. Instead, it puts many perspectives side by side, all in one book, all given equal value and equal weight. We have the voice of Job demanding answers from God, placed right beside that series of repetitions from Ecclesiastes, offering a more poetic purpose of fate. We have Hagar calling to God for hope in the wilderness, to the gospel writers describing Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. To me, that's the great wisdom of our biblical witness. The editors of the Bible knew that theodicy wasn't simple. God seemed to be present and speaking through evil in many different ways. And so rather than being reductionistic, rather than trying to control the interpretation of evil, these writers let God be present in the many ways that God really and truly seems to be in our world. They also let God show the many ways that healing and salvation and reconciliation and wholeness can all occur in the aftermath of the unspeakable. And because of that multiplicity, our varied attempts to make sense of evil are all given credence. As religious leaders, it's tempting to try to guide people by providing answers. But when it comes to evil, answers aren't necessarily the same as comfort. Sometimes, as Susan Bryson writes, rendering evil into black and white terms does more harm than good. What the biblical witness reminds us then is that our calling is less to give answers and more to provide space for God to speak purpose and impart meaning to us in situations that seem without purpose and that seem meaningless. In other words, we are called to speak as the Bible does, acknowledging the multiple ways that God transforms evil in our world. In so doing, like the author of Ecclesiastes, we acknowledge that there is indeed a time for many things. Amen.